All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Good times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. I'm speaking to you from the borough of Queens. It is the seventh day of June, 2020. That is the borough of Queens in New York City. Before I talk more about today's show, I'd like to remind you I am the author of a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks, and we like to plug Chen Lin's letter, What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling, especially if you're interested in the biotech sector. Chen has some great ideas and some great research that he shares with his subscribers there, chenpicks.com. And as always, we like to pass along Michael Oliver's website as well. It's olivermsa.com. Michael Oliver will be with me in just a moment here to give us some of his latest ideas about the markets. And before I get into today's show, let me remind you that I will be attending and participating in the Metals Investor Forum in Toronto this coming Saturday and Sunday, as will two of my guests today, Quentin Henning and Eric Coffin. There is no charge to attend this event, but you do need to sign up beforehand. And to do that, you can go to Metals Investor Forum, their website, metalsinvestorforum.com, enter your name and email, and you will have admission to this event that's held at the Delta Hotel in Toronto. Quentin will be presenting Irving Resources there. He'll be talking about that, as he will be later today in this show. And I'll be speaking about the dire economic conditions the U.S. has gotten itself into and why you really need to have some gold in your portfolio as a result. I have invited Klondike Gold, Irving Resources, Core Asset Corp, and Calibre Mining are the companies that I have invited to the show. Included in the free of charge event is a continental breakfast on both days, as well as cocktails at the end of the sessions, both on Saturday and Sunday. So I look forward to seeing you there. Be sure to say hello if you are able to attend. I do want to thank each of you for listening to the show, making it one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. Also want to invite you to keep your questions and comments. Send them along to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. Questions, the number four, taylor@gmail.com. Also want to thank our sponsors making the show economically viable. This week's sponsors, Irving Resources, Novo Resources, Eloro Resources, Core Asset Corp, Timberline Resources, Lion One Metals, SK Mining, and Reyna Gold Corp. I've titled today's show, Investing in a Rapidly Changing World. Few investors and letter writers combine such an intimate knowledge of the junior mining exploration sector and the metals markets in general than does Eric Coffin. He will be joining me in the second half of today's show. He also possesses a brilliant grasp of the interplay of macroeconomic forces on the junior sector and the metals markets. As co-founder of the Metals Investor Forum, I want to get a sense from Eric about the companies that he is really keen on investing in and those that he will be taking with him to the Metals Investor Forum. So we'll be talking to Eric in the second half of today's show. Quentin Henning will join me during the second segment to provide an update on Irving Resources, as I just noted, and that company's 2022 drill program, which is in part is designed to test the newly discovered Hot Springs gold system buried under a more recent discovery. Quentin has compared this discovery geologically with that of the multi-million ounce gold deposit at Fruta del Norte. That's a project in Ecuador that is doing extremely well, and he thinks, geologically at least, the model looks very similar to that. It is an exciting story, so I look forward to what Quentin has to say in the second segment of today's show. But right now, I'm happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is with me, and really glad to have him. Boy, I'll tell you, in these kind of tumultuous times, it's really great to have a veteran with us like Michael. Thanks for joining me, Michael. It's always good to have you with us. You put out a portfolio grid for your subscribers, basically summarizing the markets that you really want to be in and the key trigger points and the ones you don't want to be in. And there aren't that many that you want to be in, but go ahead and talk to us about what you like and what you don't like. What do you think people should be focused on and what they should stay away from now?
Well, we decided about a month or so ago to produce every 2 weeks a what we call a portfolio grid. What do we mean? Okay. You got to realize that the U.S. stock market is not occupied by the normal gold traders and so forth. 80% of the ownership of the assets in the stock market are owned by institutional investors. Okay. Mm-hmm. That means large funds and pension funds. Okay. Now, how do these folks operate? Well, they don't operate by the time frame that most so-called gold traders operate, week to week, day, you know, day to day. They're fairly non-emotional, although I'm sure they get emotional when they're wrong. But they look at things quarter to quarter, year to year, and they place their allocations in a matrix that includes such categories as the stock market itself, let's say the S&P and the NASDAQ 100, long-term government bonds, municipal bonds, real estate, and high-yield corporate debt. Now, also in that matrix, traditionally, sort of at the bottom, but accepted as a needed category, is gold, because it protects you over the long haul. Everybody recognizes, even if you don't like it short-term, that it does preserve its value over decades. Okay, so it's there. It's part of the traditional portfolio matrix. So what we do is we summarize every 2 weeks our long-term trend view of each of those categories, whether we turn positive, turn negative, what level, and what might be in play short-term or something. But right now it's very interesting because if you're running a pension fund, CalPERS, California fund, or Illinois, or running any big mutual fund or anything, you've got a very strange situation right now in that you don't have any choices except one, okay? For instance, right now, we're now 6 months into the new year, a year that most people didn't expect to turn out the way it's turned out. We did, but, I mean, that's fine. S&P's down 14%, and that's a rally, okay? NASDAQ 100 is down 23%, and that's a rally. Long-term government bonds are down 22% from where they closed last year. Municipal bonds are down 7.5%. And real estate, as measured by several real estate-based ETFs, are down 16%.
Yeah.
Good grief. I mean, you know, these are normally, some of these compete with each other sometimes. You know, usually when the stock market's in trouble, you can rush over to the government bonds and, you know, save yourself there and protect your clients' assets. But that's not true anymore. So suddenly, nothing's working. What's going on here? Okay. Well, the one category that is working, and pardon me for saying this because I know a lot of people think it's not working, gold's up 1.5% on the year. Well, of all these traditional assets, that's a killer. I mean, that's, you know, you'd love to be there, you know. And so, in fact, some of these funds do have positions in, for instance, GLD, for example, like Bridgewater Associates owns some substantial portion of GLD. That's not true with most of the pension funds. But anyway, so it's not a good year for the major asset managers because their choices are not working. And they, unfortunately, years ago, they shifted out of stock, out of bonds where they used to earn interest. And the Fed denied them interest by cutting the cost of money to nothing. The basic commodity of human interaction is money. And they took its price down effectively to zero, and so they couldn't make any interest, so they started pushing their money into the stock market. And it did well for a while, you know, especially the last year or two, where we went vertical after the money printing in March of 2020. But now it's not working, so they're desperate. The only thing that's up is gold. When in fact, if you look a little closer, the GDX, the gold mining ETFs, up 1.5% along with gold. Nobody notices that. Everybody notices that it's lower than it was several months ago, but it's up on the year. What's going on? Meanwhile, the two biggest blue chip gold miners, Newmont Mining and Barrick were up 9% and 10% on the year. Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I suggest to people who are invested in gold to stand back for a minute, quit looking at the day-to-day, week-to-week. You know, if you bought high and you're hurting, well, that's because you bought high, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But basically, as an asset category, it's doing quite well in a very bad year.
Mm-hmm.
And we suspect, based on our analysis, that it will continue to do well. Now, over time, these portfolio managers, the state pension funds, they get together every quarter and they have their meeting and they vote and so forth, and they may shift some assets, but they don't do it day-to-day, week-to-week. Over time, if that relationship still persists, where gold is still hanging in there up on the year, and miners are up 8-9%, and yet the rest of the market continues under pressure, they will be forced by simple necessity to shift more and more assets into these small market arenas, gold, gold miners, silver miners. So it's an issue of the arm wrestling match going on over time, whether attrition alone will cause an asset class shift more and more into gold.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, there's a lot of assets out there that are not comfortable right now. Mm-hmm. And if they begin to shift even trivially into gold, imagine what will happen to the gold and the mining sector. So I think everybody needs to sort of step back and look at that coldly from the point of view of the Illinois State Pension Fund, the CalPERS, major mutual funds, as a very good alternative. And so far, 6 months into the year, it's hanging in there quite well, despite
mm-hmm.
all the sensitivities.
Right. Well, I'm reminded, Richard Russell used to say that the winners in a bear market are those that lose the least. So yeah. if you're at all positive, I guess, so of course you have to factor in the fact that we have this inflation, consumer inflation now, that is also eating away at your purchasing power. But nonetheless, yeah. Gold is hanging in there, as you point out. And more than likely with these massive companies like CalPERS and Illinois Pension Fund, these guys have enormous billions and billions, I would imagine, of money to put somewhere. So we could mm-hmm. could see an explosion on the upside. One other thing I wanted to ask you about before we have to go to break here, Michael, oil has done very well. Energy has done mm-hmm. very well. And you didn't mention you like to look at the Bloomberg Commodities Fund. Are those up for the year?
Well, they're up nicely for the year. And again, we don't correlate gold. You should not correlate gold to commodity price, quote, inflation.
Right, of
gold
course.
Gold is a metric of inflation generally. And remember, mm-hmm. we've had a dozen years now of vast monetary inflation, which went
right.
where? Not into commodities, it went into the stock market. So
right.
asset managers will move it, with a shovel. They'll divert the river to a different direction, and now they're diverting it into commodities and commodity-related.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think our bet is that the gold, silver, and the related miners will outperform every category out there over the next year or two.
Including the commodity sector in general.
Including the commodity sector, yes. It's bolted
yeah.
ahead, but you've got to remember, gold had already doubled from late 2015 to summer of 2020 before commodities even upturned in
mm-hmm.
late 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Gold
mm-hmm.
had already gone to $2,000,
mm-hmm.
and yet the commodity index was still laboring at its lows. So don't try to correlate them. Actually, our view is that commodities lag gold.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the next leg up, gold will outpace the commodity complex.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll have to leave it go at that, Michael. I should mention to my listeners that there are a lot of other things that Michael talks about besides gold. He talks about that all the time. But, for example, he had some comments on Amazon, Apple, Microsoft. Well, he talked about real estate. There's lots of things in Michael's letter to keep up with. If you're a serious investor, you might want to consider signing up for his letter. It's olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com. Thank you so much, Michael, for being with us.
Thank you,
always
Jay.
Great. It's always great to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank
well, folks,
you.
Don't go away. We have to go to break now, but Quentin Henning will be back with me when we come back to talk about Irving Resources. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Quentin Henning.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barikoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
SK Mining Corp, trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQX, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals, rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really happy to have Dr. Quentin Henning with me once again today. He's here to talk about Irving Resources. The company trades in Toronto under the symbol IRV. You can buy it in the States down here, as I have, under the symbol IRVRF. I have 61.9 million shares. I think that's a correct number thereabouts. It was selling at around 89 cents in U.S. money earlier today when I checked it, giving it a market cap around 55 million in U.S. money. So it's a very small market cap company. With some, I think, some really big upside potential. Newmont Mining owns 14% of the company. You just heard our last guest talk about Newmont. It's beating the pants off the markets in general, up 10% or so. One of the strongest gold mining companies in the world. Newmont Mining owns 14% of this little baby, and the directors own around 11%. Management and the directors. So this is a company I've been following for some time. It is focused on exploring silica-rich gold mineralization in Japan. And silica-rich ores are especially valuable in Japan because of that company's numerous melters, which use the silica as a flux in its copper recovery, in the recovery of copper. Its smelters use it. And this helps to really reduce the cost. It can enhance the economics of these projects because the silica itself is valuable, and the companies get paid for the silica as well as the gold, and they don't have to spend a lot of capital to build a mill because the smelters recover the gold for the company. So there's a lot to, I think, that really make this a very exciting story, I think, potentially. And the company's had a great deal of success so far in exploring these silica-rich deposits, and that's why we're really happy to have Quentin here to give us an update. Thanks for joining me, Quentin.
Thanks, Jay. Always a pleasure.
It's really good to have you with me. You know, the last time we talked, I think you talked about a December news release by the company in which it talked about a new discovery. Actually, it was sort of a hidden, one of these hidden hot springs discoveries, silica-rich discoveries that was buried underneath the one that you were exploring, and you were quite excited about that. And you even called it, I think, if I remember right, you talked about it being a possible game changer for the company. And I'm just wondering, do we have any news on that since then? I think you might have put a drill hole or two into it.
We did do some drilling this winter in spring. So yes, we completed two holes. We had some challenges. The rig broke down, and because of there was pretty strict COVID restrictions at the time, it was very difficult to get stuff happening and get parts and everything we needed. But we did get it fired up again in April, and we completed the second hole, I think, around the end of April. The other thing we faced is that COVID wave that swept through Japan. A lot of members of our team came down with COVID over about a four-week period, and that really hampered us a bit. But we did complete two holes. We've got several holes planned here. The first two holes came at the target area from the south, so they were drilling south and north. One of them, the first one that we drilled, I talked about in a news release, I think in March, maybe latter part of March, about the visuals. We saw a lot of veins and stuff, and that we're eagerly awaiting assays. We would probably have the assays back right now if it hadn't been for the COVID that swept through the crew. Basically, our SARs and everybody were out for the count for a few weeks. But we did get the samples into the lab, I think somewhere around the second week in May. And, you know, the lab turnaround right now is about 4 to 6 weeks once samples hit the lab. So I anticipate assays back from that hole probably within the next couple of weeks. The second hole was a little bit behind that, so I'm going to have to wait patiently. But, again, it came at the system from the footwall, and it tested kind of the eastern part of the system. Both holes were very informative, but a lot of veins and alterations seen in both holes. But the next series of holes, the ones that we have planned from the north side coming at it, you know, the humpy target from the hanging wall, those are the ones that I'm dead keen on. We have access in that area now, just, you know, a little game of 3D chess going on there with permitting and accessibility and having a pad available. We got a pad on that north side now, and we're able to drill those holes once this new rig gets in place. What we announced this morning is really super important for the company. Look, it's been a challenge. I'm not going to pretend, you know, COVID restrictions and stuff. It's been a challenge operating in Japan, mainly because of international travel, getting drillers in and out of the country. It's been a challenge on a number of other fronts too, you know, with the kind of keeping the group very tight together and not giving them access or not, having people go in contact with the greater community and stuff. But we managed to pull it off for 2 years. We got 2 years drilling completed during COVID, but now we're kind of looking at the situation going forward, and we're thinking, you know what, it's best to have an autonomous drill operation in country, in house. So we've committed to purchasing two rigs. We've got one rig that just left port in Vancouver out of a company called Geotech Drilling. They're affiliated with JDS, which a lot of people know. And those guys have been over backwards to help us get a rig going over to Japan. That one, that A5 rig, is going to arrive sometime around the middle of July. And that's going to be the one we move up to site and we can resume drilling. We've also purchased a second rig through Bord Longyear out of Australia. That rig is supposed to arrive, I believe, in the third quarter, somewhere around maybe late August or early September is the last word I have. And that rig will allow us to drill other targets as well. So we can employ it down in Yamagano, for example. So these two rigs are basically going to belong to the company and be operated by an in-house drill team that we build over the next few months. So this is a big, big move for the company, but I think it's going to be more effective over the long run. It's very similar to the same strategy that Lion One has employed in Fiji, where they own and operate their drills. I think it'll save money. I think it'll be more effective. It'll help expedite exploration. It'll move things forward because we have two rigs. We can drill multiple targets. It gives us a lot more advantage than we currently have. So, you know, again, big step for the company, but it's going to pay off.
I believe Lion One has their own assay lab too. Is that something that might be in the future, or do you need to ramp things up a bit more before you do that?
We commit to building our own assay lab, but I do think the assay situations are going to improve. Look, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, I guess, right? I guess I advise people to believe it when they see it. But, you know, there's been a lot of scuttlebutt in the mining sector about, you know, the whole assay situation. And you know, ALS and SES and all of these commercial labs, they realize what an absolute disaster assay turnaround has been. They've been making big moves to increase capacity here in the past few months, really since the beginning of the year. I think they're starting to take this, you know, this imminent bull cycle more seriously, and they're starting to ramp up capacity. Now, that coupled with the fact that the COVID restrictions by and far have fallen away, I think is going to help improve things dramatically, touch wood. But I think we will see, as long, it's really about getting the samples over the lab. If we can deliver the samples to the lab in Vancouver, and, you know, in a timely fashion, and the lab starts to get its turnaround back to the more of the norm, which is about 4 to 6 weeks, I think we'll see an improvement there. I'm not too worried.
So you were able to tell something from the visuals. I guess judging from what you said, you're pretty pleased with what you saw. Now it's just a matter of whether or not they're mineralized.
We'll get the assays for these two holes. If we get one hole one back here shortly, then we'll put a news release out around that. But as soon as we have something in hand, we can talk more about it. But yes, visually, we were quite pleased with the drill holes that we saw, quite a few veins. The next holes, though, the ones from the north, I'm particularly excited about, because we are drilling from what's called the hanging wall of the block. It's basically the down block, and that's usually where the more activity is. We had to get some access built in that area as far as drill pads and stuff. We have that now. We're going to be able to drill that starting in July. And that's if anybody looks back to our news releases with the figures, the cross-sectional figures that show you the target there, I think you'll understand what I mean. That's where all the activity is in this hydrothermal system from what we can see.
Right. If people want to visualize that, I guess that's on the website, at Irving website, right?
Correct. Yep. Irving.
Right. Excellent. Well, you, in the news release today, you also talked about some of the other exploration targets. You mentioned Yamagano. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Yeah, look, Yamagano has been, we've been doing work down there for the past 6 or 8 months pretty consistently now. We've got in and did a gravity survey. We've done a magnetic survey. And we're now about to do a CSAMT survey. This is the survey that looks at the electrical properties of the rock, particularly the resistivity of the rock. And in epithermal systems such as this, silica, which is often very abundant around the hydrothermal system, shows up as a resistive feature. So it's been very effective in our exploration up at Omoi and Hokuri and elsewhere. We think it'll be very effective down at Yamagano. This CSAMT survey is going to be comprehensive. It'll cover the entire Yamagano district. And we're going to build a three-dimensional model that hopefully shows us the roots, the feeders, if you will, of these targets in depth, so we can better target these things with drilling. Again, you know, because we'll have two rigs now, this makes our life a lot easier. We'll be able to deploy one of the rigs down to Yamagano and be able to drill there at the same time we're drilling up at Omu.
Yeah. Well, you got people a little excited about the possibilities there. When you mentioned Fruta del Norte, I think you see geologically some similarities. Same. Of course, time will tell, right? And that's what we're.
It will. No, I'm very confident that we're onto a big, big system there at Dev. I do think that these next few holes that we drill from the north are going to be critical. That look at those cross sections, and you'll see what I mean. That big feeder system in the hanging wall should be in that north area, just north of the Humpy vein. And I think that if we drill in that area, I think we'll hit the Fruta del Norte, hopefully analog, in, you know, that meaning a sheeted vein system, like an abundant vein system that maybe bulks out to a larger tonnage thing.
Well, we're certainly going to be watching with bated breath, no doubt about that. And I mean, Newmont Mining is in there. They're not going to fool around with a 1 million-ounce deposit. They're interested in your company in Irving because they see it has potential scale. And I know that's your philosophy. You don't get involved with things that don't have potential for world-class deposits. So
they stuck with us from day one, and they're, I would anticipate them sticking with us going forward too.
Yeah, it's good to have a partner like that in your that you're working with. That's for sure. So financing, I mean, Newmont is there, no doubt, if it's need be. But what I think the company's okay financing wise.
Yeah, we have about $6.7 million at the moment, so we're in pretty good shape. You know, that said, traditionally what we've done with Newmont is every year we review our exploration program, and then they indicate if they'd like to fund further. So they're, you know, they're will likely be, just given that pattern, there will likely be another phase of finance. And, you know, that's a good thing. They're very supportive. They're very keen on what we're doing at Omu, but now with Yamagano and the progress we're making on geophysics, I think there will be a point here where it becomes very clear there's some high priority targets that that need some drilling. So, you know, stay tuned. I think you'll see a lot of attention being given to that property in particular.
All right. Well, it's a really exciting story. I want to thank you, Quentin, for spending time to give us an update. Anything else, or that pretty much covers it for now?
Well, look, it's you know, I don't know what you think of the gold market here, Jay, but it looks like we have found some kind of floor, or if you will, I think, you know, we might have to be a little patient, but I think everybody in the gold space is patient. You know, they know this game. But I think that sometime in the next few months,
those of us that are still hanging in there are patient, are the patient types, or we wouldn't be here. That's for sure.
Exactly.
You have some ideas that you express about the markets from time to time, at the Crescat Gets Active weekly videos, YouTube videos as well. What do you have? The boom and the what's that model you have?
The bonk and boing phenomenon.
The bonk and boing.
We're basically, you know, the gold, the chart, if it hits that upward trending, you know, line of resistance, which it has here recently, and it's bounced off of it, it can often tend to, you know, take off in a big, big way. Now, it might, everybody wants instant gratitude, you know, gratification.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that's not the way the gold space ever works. So, my best guess, and where I'm kind of putting my money, is that sometime around late August to maybe end of October, in that window, is going to be the boing part of that chart, you know, that we're going to see things take off. And, you know, I guess my message based on that, and where we're the kind of position we're taking here at Crescat, is that this is the time to get well positioned in good storage and companies.
Yeah.
And it's in preparation for that hopefully euphoric period in which we can wake up every day and we feel like we're accomplishing something, Jay.
Well, indeed. And now is the time, because it's these kind of little small cap market companies. When things start to take off, there may not be any shares there at anything like the current prices. And we've seen it happen so often. When these little micro cap companies get hot and people get excited, as I think Doug Casey talked about it, something like Niagara Falls through a garden hose or something like that. So, all right, we'll have to leave it go at that, Quentin. Thank you so much for giving us this update. It's a very exciting story. Not a lot going on recently, but that could change very quickly. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Jay.
All right, folks, we do have to go to break, but don't go away. Eric Coffin will be with me. He's a hard rock analyst, and he's going to talk to us. I'm sure he'll have some ideas about the boing and the bonk, or whatever Quentin was talking about. So Eric will have some ideas about where he thinks the gold market's going. And Eric also has a lot of good insights into the workings of the financial markets as well. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Eric Coffin.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Reyna Gold is a newly listed company trading on the OTCQB under the symbol REYGF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol REYG. Its flagship asset, La Gloria, is a 24,000-hectare district-scale property in the prolific Mojave Sonora megashire in Mexico, between La Herradura, Mexico's biggest gold mine by Fresnillo, and El Chanate mine by Alamos Gold. La Gloria has very high-grade sampling and is in the first phase of a 10,000-meter drill program. The technical team is led by Dr. Peter McGaw, co-founder of Mag Silver, and Doug Kirwin, former VP of Ivanhoe Mines. Learn more at reynagold.com.
Timberline Resources is a mineral exploration and resource development company focused on gold discovery in the world-class mining jurisdiction of Nevada. The company's flagship Eureka project hosts a significant gold resource and drill-indicated upside potential at nearby higher-grade targets. Timberline Resources trades in Canada under the symbol TBR and on the OTCQB in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. To learn more about this district-scale asset with exciting discovery potential, please visit www.timberlineresources.co.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
America is heading over a fiscal cliff. Home prices are still receding and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/VoiceAmerica.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me a good friend, Eric Coffin. Eric is the editor of the HRA, the Hard Rock Analyst. It's a family of publications. He is also a co-founder of the Metals Investor Forum, along with Scott Gibson. It's an excellent event they put on. There's one in Toronto coming up. Those of you who might be in the Toronto area or plan to be might want to consider going there. Go to the metalsinvestorforum.com. It's a free of charge event, but you do need to sign up, leave your email so that you have entrance to this event. It's in downtown Toronto. I forget the name of the hotel, but it's
the Delta Hotel.
Right, exactly. Well, thanks, Eric. Hi, thanks for joining me. Really glad you could be with me. I hear you're out there chasing the cows somewhere in Ontario.
Yeah, I'm out in the boonies, and it's just me and the heifers. That seems to be about it. I'm surprised they have electricity, much less cell towers, to be quite honest. But seems like they do.
Well, that's nice to get out and away from the city once in a while, I think, and out amongst the cows.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up amongst the cows, so I sort of miss that in a way. But anyway, here in New York City, and you're out there amongst the cows in Ontario. Well, I'm really glad you could be with us today. And just give us your idea. What are your thoughts now about the global economy? I mean, I'm an old guy. I've been around a long time, about probably 10 years or so longer than you. And I've seen a lot of cycles, but this one seems to be different than a lot of others in some ways. But I'd just like to hear what you have to think, what you have to say about what's your assessment of the global economy now.
I mean, one thing I've said in the publication for months now, and you and I both know that the four most dangerous words in economics, or this time it's different, but this time it actually is different. I'm not sure, you know, and it's not really a traditional cycle. Like, yes, we had this razor sharp, very deep recession in the midst of all the lockdowns, but it's not, it hasn't really evolved like a traditional cycle because everybody got all this cash showered on them. So right now you've got the situation where, you know, the combination of the excess cash, supply chain issues, you know, far and wide, you know, we're dealing with 7-8% inflation. And I'm finding it a bit odd, honestly, because I watch Wall Street, and Wall Street seems to be convinced that this time it isn't different, i.e. that the Fed will always bail them out, that, you know, the Greenspan puts turned into the Powell put, which I find strange because Powell himself, you know, Lael Brainard, the vice chair of the FOMC, most of the FOMC members I've heard talk in the last 2 months keep saying, like, there ain't no put, people. Like, we're worried about inflation. We're going to push rates until we see inflation getting down close to our 2% target. And if Wall Street gets whacked in the process, oh, well. But for some reason, Wall Street simply doesn't believe it. Like, they don't believe it. It's really very odd, very, very strange. And I'm based on the assumption that I'm kind of taking Powell at his word. He keeps saying, like, I'm going to go past neutral. And neutral rates are sort of a guess, really. But somewhere between 2.5% and 3% is probably the neutral rate. So if he's going past that, that means he's going to, you know, 3, 3.5, 4. If they go that far, Wall Street's rolling over again for sure. Like, I'll be shocked if we don't see lower lows. I mean, yes, we've got a nice rally right now, but I think this rally peters out in the next few weeks. And before this is said and done, we probably see the S&P 10-20% lower than where it is right now. What I'm counting on is, well, two things. Short term, if you look back at 2008 and 2000, in both of those cases, you know, we had very deep market corrections, bear markets. The first thing that turned was gold. Gold turned, in 2008, gold turned about 6 months ahead of the S&P. I think it's, well, about four, I guess. Gold turned like in November, and the S&P turned in like the end of March. And I got a feeling we're going to see something similar again this time. But what it's probably going to take, maybe, is the Fed getting to the point where they're saying, yeah, okay, we're getting close. When you see the Fed start talking about, yeah, we think the top is going to be X in terms of the interest rate cycle, that's when I think you're going to see gold move. And we're probably not that far off. I mean, I'm kind of hoping, but this might just be naive optimism. I'm kind of hoping that, you know, the 1785 low we saw, that maybe that's as bad as it gets. It may not do much anything for the next little while, but if it's anything like 2008 or 2001, when the rally starts, it's going to be a long one. So that's kind of my first stop. My second stop is I'm still quite comfortable with base metals. Like, yes, they're pro-cyclical. So, you know, if the economy goes in the tank, then yeah, copper probably gets knocked back 75 cents or a buck or something. But the long-term fundamentals of, you know, you name it, copper, nickel, aluminum, anything really, are so strong that I think this decade may be like the 70s where you see the Fed not quite kill inflation. It kind of keeps coming back and it keeps cycling rates up. And maybe we have these mini recessions that aren't individually that bad. But those of us that are really old, like you and me, Jay, we remember that the 70s were actually a pretty good time to be in both gold and commodities in general.
Exactly.
And that was kind of a decade of commodities.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the 2020s might be the same.
Well, it certainly seems like it. When you mentioned 2.5-3%, I guess you're talking Fed funds rate, probably?
Yeah. I mean, that's apparently, I mean, the Fed's best guess at what the neutral, and the neutral, the Fed defines the neutral rate as the interest rate where it doesn't slow growth, but it kind of zeroes out, you know, unemployment. You don't see any inflationary pressure. I mean, obviously the Fed and everybody is shooting for a soft landing, but and I hope that's what we get. But I know that if you look at the long term average for the Fed and other major central banks, their batting average when it comes to generating a soft landing is about 250, so 1 in 4. The other three times they don't pull it off. So I think the rational assumption has to be that they're not going to pull it off, that it's going to be a recession, not a soft landing.
Yeah, I mean, some people are looking to to Powell. In fact, I think Paul has referenced Paul Volcker. He wants to be the second coming of Paul Volcker in a way. But, you know, it seems to me that it's a lot different than it was in 1980 now as well, Eric, because, you know, our debt to GDP at that time was around 30%. Now it's over 100. It's 120 or 130%. And someone pointed out that if the government's borrowing cost rose to 4 or 4.5%, it would be 30%. The interest expense would be 30% of our budget. That's equal to our defense expenditure. That's equal to our Social Security expenditures. Yeah. And so there, I mean, it's just, you would think there would be some loss of confidence in the dollar in the system if we got to that point. And I just, Doug Nolan, who I had on the show just recently, a couple of weeks ago, he is the portfolio manager for the McIlvany Management Tactical Short Fund. Doug says he really believes that Powell wants to, really has his heart set on and really wants to do the right thing and rein this thing, you know, and get it under control.
Yeah.
But Doug is just really thinks it's going to be almost impossible for him to do that. I hope he's wrong. Everybody has to hope he's wrong because Doug says, and I wrote what he said down here. He says, history suggests today festering issues in the credit derivatives and structured finance will prove woefully worse than anyone today appreciates. And there is little policymakers can do to remedy the situation. The cycle has changed. The amount of stimulus necessary to one more time resuscitate the bubble dynamics would risk hyperinflation. So Doug is worried that the problem that we have is that because it's, you know, every time we have to, the balance sheet just keeps getting exponentially larger every credit cycle. And so Doug is worried that this time it could get away in the opposite direction. I just hope that's, I mean, I remember how frightening it was in the 70s. I mean, I was a young man, and then I remember our first mortgage is a 17.5% mortgage. I remember how that was frightening. And so I just hope somehow that Powell can get his hands, his arms around this thing, get this thing under control, because it's very frightening.
But, you know, and you know, and I know that guys in our business, and especially hard money types, they like to dump on central bank governors. And I personally, I'm glad I'm not in his shoes. He's in a really tough place because you can't let inflation run, because we all know that, you know, the average person on the street, they're not going to get wage increases that match inflation. We both know that's how the world works, and Powell certainly knows that, and he's been saying it for months. And he's going, look, if I don't do this, everybody's going to fall farther and farther behind. I think he's probably a little confused that there hasn't been any slowing yet, but I think we can thank a year and a half of pandemic stimulus for that. I think the average person just has a bigger cushion right now than they would normally have in a normal cycle. That's part of what makes it different. But even so, you're seeing the savings rate drop like a stone right now.
Right.
I don't know whether it's going to be 2 months or 4 months or 6 months, but I think we'll get to the point where consumers will hit the wall, and that's where he's going to have to be, you know, lucky, honestly. He'll have to just guess the right interest level, because otherwise he'll push it into recession. And the other thing, you and I have talked about this in the past, you know, I know the letters MMT are anathema to hard money types, and people are probably throwing their phone at the wall right now. But the truth of the matter is, I look at that, and there's a lot of things with MMT I don't like. It's a very kind of inherently left-wing kind of thing. But the basic concept of the Feds, plural, just getting to the point of saying, you know what, screw this. Let's just have the Treasury print a bunch of stuff. The Fed will pay it off, swap one way, swap the other, and wipe a bunch of the debt out, monetize the debt, in other words. I still don't see a lot of other ways out of this, honestly. I mean, how else is this going to happen? Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Powell is really opposed to doing that. Doug Nolan is saying there's probably no other way out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It is getting to the point where realistically there's no way you're going to get rid of the debt pile the size in pick any G7 country. It's the same in all of them. Politically, at a political level, it's not feasible. There's no way you could pass the spending cuts and tax increases that you would need to make that happen without being guaranteed of being out of office at the next election. So what politician's going to have the stones to do that? Let's be honest. Like, they're not. They're just not.
Well, I don't.
So I don't think he's going to have much choice. I think he hates it. Yeah. I don't think he's going to have much choice.
Yeah, and unlike Paul Volcker, things were much different at that time. As I say, the debt was much less onerous. We still had a lot of exports. We hadn't really become, you know, totally a service economy yet at that stage like we are now. Anyway, with just limited time here, Eric, I want to get into some of your ideas. What companies are you taking to the Metals Investor Forum? I think you gave me some names. You mentioned copper a little while ago. I know Pan Global is one of them you mentioned, right?
Pan Global is one of them. I'm a big fan of that deal. It's got all the guys running it, very high-level guys out of RTZ and a few other places, and they really know the Iberian Pyrite Belt, which is where they are. They've already got a very good-looking discovery called Romana, but the reason why I think this is a good time for it, notwithstanding the potential copper issues 6 months down the road, they've just finished flying airborne on a much larger concessionary that they picked up a couple of months ago. That has 8 or 9 very large gravity anomalies. And in the Iberian Pyrite Belt, when you're looking for these massive sulfide deposits, you look for gravity anomalies. They've been doing much better quality ground gravity. And Tim tells me, I talked to him a couple of days ago, and he said, I have a lot more targets now, and the targets look a lot better. I think the odds of them making another 1 or 2 or 3 discoveries are actually very high. And he's just about to start really ramping the drilling up. So I think that's a great story. Another one I'm bringing is Orezone. I followed Orezone for years. The guy that runs it, Patty Downey, I mean, I love Pat. He's a brilliant guy, fantastic mine builder. You always get nervous about guys going from being a developer to a producer, but Patrick has built 3 or 4 mines, very successful ones, and so far everything's right in line, under budget, ahead of schedule. Bombori should be pouring gold in about, hopefully, a couple of months, and by the time they finish ramping up, it'll be 200,000 ounce a year plus producer. They're adding a lot of ounces. I think it's going to make a ton of money, and frankly, once they're up to nameplate, I suspect they probably get bought out by somebody. Honestly, I think that's probably the end game for them. A third one is a company called Altale Mining, ATLY. They've just started up their second mine. They've got a mine now called Campo Morado. It's basically these are both kind of VMS mines. Campo Morado is mainly zinc, and Campo Morado has a reputation for being a tough mine, and it is. It's not easy metallurgically. It's got all kinds of issues, but these guys have done a great job of turning that around, and they're actually spending pretty decent cash flow out of that. But they've started their second mine. They literally just started like 2 weeks ago, putting ore through the mill. Once they get that up to 500 tons a day, they will add a second mill. They should be up to 1,000 tons per day by the end of the year. That one's also VMS, but it's predominantly gold-silver, the gold-silver, and it's a much easier deposit than Campo is. I won't bore people with the details, but it's very fine. It's very fine particle size, which is really tricky for metallurgy. Tahueto, which is the second mine, doesn't have those issues. It's just your garden variety, nice, large particle size VMS deposit. So, and given how good a job those guys did with Campo, I'm pretty comfortable they're not going to screw things up at Tahueto. So that's one where you should see the cash flows, I think, climb very fast over the next 6 months. It's very cheap compared to what the cash flow they should be spinning out. And the fourth company is just the High Gold Mining. I mean, great project.
Oh, yeah.
Million ounces, give or take, very high grade. Darwin Green, who runs it's a great geo. They hit an obscenely high grade drill hole last year. They're going to try to figure out where that goes because they only really got one hole into it. As a lot of you may know, last year was horrendous for assay labs. The turnaround times are terrible. They've actually done some stuff to speed that up too, but that's another one where that one's just more, it's more of an exploration story, but they do have 1 million ounces resource there already. Yeah. So it's not like it's not like it's greenfields or anything. And one last one I'll mention, because I know you want to talk about it, is Lion One, which I followed forever. I love Wally. I mean, Wally Barakoff, he's such a character. I love the guy. And he's one of these guys, you look at his track record, he's built up 3 or 4 large development level companies and had them taken out. He probably personally accounts for at least $2 or $3 billion in takeovers in the last 20 years. Lion One, they've been working on for a long time. It's always felt like a multi-million ounce project to me, but it's, you know, narrow veins are, they're tricky. Like it takes a lot of drill holes to prove a bounce with a narrow vein.
That's right.
That's just how
that's
it
right.
is.
Well,
they might have had a game changer yesterday, right? I mean,
yeah, we'll have to leave it go at that, Eric. We're out of time, but that's a great one, and I like High Gold as well, both of them, and I think Adelaide Mining is one that I followed. I know that Campo de Marado, they have a lot of gold there, but weren't able to get it out. They were working on that. I guess maybe, I don't know if they're making any progress on that or not, but we do have to leave it go at that. We are out of time, Eric. I'm sorry. We have to talk more sometime soon.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Look forward to seeing you in Toronto.
Yeah, let's have dinner on Saturday.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll do it. All right, okay. Take care. All right, folks, we do have to go. That's it for this week. Next week, Alistair McLeod is with me. Quentin Henning will be here to talk about Lion One, actually. We just talked about Lion One, a Suvato project. He'll be here. Until then, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.